Heavenly Father, we thank you for your blessings. We ask you to be with us during this day and the preparation day. Bless us during the Sabbath. Bless your church. And mostly bless the friends that are here and all of these leaders, health leaders in your church, that we can promote health evangelism and help to announce our message to the world, and then that you can come soon. We ask your blessings, ask your presence now, in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay. Yes. I should be a pastor. I was thinking to be a pastor before I went to the medical school, but my mother wanted me to be a doctor, so I have to follow her and keep her happy. And then I... Yeah. Yeah, so I am not a pastor, but I was raised in the church, so I preach. And I, by the way, tomorrow I'm going to preach in the Portuguese church. In Portuguese, okay?
Yeah. Portuguese church here in Orlando?
There is two. One here and one in Fort, whatever fort they have. Yeah, Fort Myer. I think it's Fort Myer. Yeah. One thing that I forgot to tell you is when we discuss about the HPV virus that is related to colon cancer, the HPV virus also is becoming related to HPV virus related to cervical cancer in women. And now they are saying that the HPV virus is one of the factors in colon cancer. They are finding that. Probably... or mostly among homosexuals. And among homosexuals, we have HPV virus related to throat cancer, mouth cancer, and because of the practice that they do. So it's terrible what is happening, but this is something that we have to know, that there is a relationship. I might come back to that when I talk about other cancers, but it's just a review that came to my mind. Okay, Adventist Health Study. We have practically three Adventist Health Studies. The first one, the Adventist Mortality Study, that finished in 68, that compare Adventists to the California other Adventists. Then we have Adventist Health Study 1, that was the most known Adventist. And then we have the Air Pollution Adventist Study, that is still running. And then we have the Adventist Health Study 2. This one was 36,000 Adventists. I don't remember how many people were in the first one. And this one now is 96,000. So it's a big cohort. So why study the Adventists? Just because we are diverse. We don't smoke, we don't drink, but we have a range of dietary habits. So for a researcher, this is a gold mine. You see, these guys, you can isolate practically a variable, two variables you can put away and do your own research on without needing to control for them. Yeah?
Most do not smoke and most do not drink. Are you trying to tell me the same Adventists of smoking and drinking?
Well, that is a new trend. I'm not sure if you are familiar with that, but... smoking is not that much. I mean, I would say the thing that they put most don't smoke is related to the ones that convert to the church later. And so they cannot say that they are non-smokers for life because they have a previous story. And the same thing is valid for drinking, but drinking is coming back. I mean, you have to be careful with our youth about that. Do you know that is in our Adventist college, 30 to 40% of the kids there are drinking. And I have a story to share with you. Did I share it with you? No. About my daughter. I start with my stories and then I lost my time. But today you cannot talk, I can talk more. But my daughter used to go to Pacific Union College. And then now she's dating a non-Adventist guy, and she's going to get married in August We don't like that it's non-Adventist, but hold a little bit, okay? She was she was in Pacific Union College, and she has a boyfriend that was Adventist. I was in China. So she called me and she said, "Hey, Dad, what do you think about earrings?" And then I told her, well, in Brazil, we didn't use earrings. I mean, in America, some church they use, some other church. I don't think it depends on the culture. I mean, it would not have many difference for like using a watch or something like that. So I tried to be a little more lenient with her. And then she said, "No, it's not for me, it's for my boyfriend." I said, "Oh my goodness." And his boyfriend was Adventist. But the big thing with the boyfriend was that he was a social drinker. He and his family, Adventists, Seventh-day Adventists, believed that moderate drinking is not a problem. And so they drink a little bit of beer and a little bit of wine. We are not talking about people from the world. I mean, if we can say that they are Adventists, I don't know. But what happened is that we start fighting. I gave the news for her, and I was all with the background on cancer and showing her, and she passed to the guy, and the guy came back. And then at the end, it passed a couple of months, they broke up. Praise the Lord. And then I asked her, "What happened?" "Well, I told him, if I'm going to get married with you and then we are going to raise children, I don't want alcohol in the house. There is no way. I was raised in a different environment. There is no way that I will have that." And then they finished. So when I came back from China, I was talking about that, and she said, "You know what? The guy liked me so much, he was willing to go back. To have the relationship back, and he said that he was willing to stop alcohol." But there was another thing. And then I said, "Well, what was the thing?" "Well, he has an issue with marijuana." I said, "Oh my goodness." So we are not talking about people from the world. We are talking about people from our Adventist college. So not all of them are like that, but somehow we have this problem in our midst that is growing, and is growing more among kids. So we have to know about that. We have to address that maybe in our church. I will tell you, when I used to have a Portuguese in my other class, I'll go there. And then when I did one lesson about alcohol in the church and the Portuguese were present, I have a hard time. I mean, in the Sabbath school, the guy was saying, fighting me because Jesus drank wine, and the angel drank wine, and Abraham drank wine. I say, oh my goodness. You know, my last argument, I was losing argument. My last argument was saying, "Well, okay, you came to Adventist church, you baptized, and you supposed to sign a document there that you should not drink. So that's enough. I mean, if you didn't sign that, you are not Adventist." So that's a weak point, but okay, you have a...
In all the years that I've studied with people and worked in churches, I've only met one person ever who said they were never drunk. All the rest of them have been drunk.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, let's go for it. The Adventists are famous for longevity. They have five behaviors that are shown to increase the lifespan for at least 10 years. Not smoking, eating a plant-based diet, eating nuts several times per week, regular exercise, and maintaining a normal body weight. The first Adventist study that was done in 58 to 66, he compared Adventists in California to other people that are outside of the church, and they found that Adventists have the risk of cancer in Adventists was 21%. That means if they have 100 cases there in the other Californias, Adventists will have just 21. So that's the comparison. And the same for colorectal cancer, breast cancer, and then coronary heart disease, 66% and 98%. This is the one that they have also very lower rates for those that are vegan. And then, they have just a few guys there that were vegan in this study, so they could not make any inference because of the sample size. The Adventist Health Study 1, again, the most benefit foods on that was nuts, whole grain bread, tomatoes, soy milk, fruits, and legumes. So there was no benefit coming from animal foods in this study. So this is good for us. And there was no side effect of soy milk drinking. Now we have all this pressure against soy milk, but I believe this pressure comes from the dairy industry or the whatever industry that is pushing against that. So I don't believe that soy milk has any trouble. And Patrick can confirm that, because in China they survive with soy milk, and Japan and Korea, and then the rates of cancers are much lower there. This is there. The last, one of the last pages. If not the last. It's there. Trust me. But at least one time. Adventist Health Study 1. The findings on red meat. Red meat was associated with colon cancer, heart attack, and diabetes. It was, to my knowledge, the first study that made a correlation between red meat and diabetes. That now is becoming more common. And they probably believe that the red meat will produce a more inflammation and stimulate the fat in the belly that produce inflammatory mechanisms to break the cell receptor, insulin cell receptor. So let's go now by the Adventist study number 2. 96,000 Adventists over 30 years. 1,500 over the age of 90. Can you believe that? 1,500, that this is going to be for sure the biggest longevity studies all done, because there's a lot of people that are old here. And that is the call for the blue zone, because blue zone, we talk about blue zone, that Loma Linda is the blue zone, but it's not Loma Linda. It's the Seventh-day Adventist. I have an uncle in south of Brazil that... He is my great uncle. He was a brother of my grandmother, and he died 2 months before completing 100 years, with 99. And then he belongs to the blue zone, because he was in the church and he was following most of our principles. He followed to the book, and then. And then you might have relatives in your own family that are living longer, and mostly this is related to our lifestyle. 26.9% of this group here are African Americans. Mostly, this study will check on African Americans and whites, a little bit of Asians, and very few Hispanics, because they didn't go to the Hispanics. They are thinking that we should develop a Hispanic Adventist Health Study in this country, as we are very populated with Hispanics. And also includes Canada. Are you in that study? Oh, we have an individual here, very famous, that belongs to the Adventist Health Study. Anybody else is in the Adventist Study? Huh? So, okay. You are too? Oh, that's great. So maybe you should come up here and talk about how long you took to fill up that questionnaire. Yeah, it's like a book. It looks like you're... Yeah, it's... They try to do what they call calibration studies. So they send a sample of questions after 2 years... to a group of 2,000 to check what is your habits and to see if matches what with what you did. And sometimes they will, mostly they do that in Loma Linda, but they will ask for blood samples to compare, to do what they call markers. So if you said that you eat a lot of vitamin C, they will check the vitamin C level to see if it matches with what you said. And so they call calibration studies. Okay, what is you know about that. This is only definition. But what is the presence of those in the study? 44% are non-vegetarian. Still not vegetarian. So for a church, it's not good. I mean, for health ministry, this is a challenge for us. So we need to promote this. And how we promote this is a problem, because once you... That's what I don't like, the word vegan. When you mention vegan, people already shut down their receptors, their ears or eyes. They don't want to talk to us. So we have to approach this in a different way. And that's what I like the full plate diet, because they push for more fibers and all of a sudden you don't have space for anything else. And that should be our first message. Try to promote in your churches more vegetarian type of food. By the way, what is the main secret to promote vegetarianism? I asked this question in the Childhood Obese Initiative, and it took me a while for get the right answer. So what is the main strategy to promote vegetarian type of foods? Yeah, I did, to promote in your home, is that what you mean?
Invite
people to your home to see how. But I think you got the it has to it's taste. It's called culinary. Dr. Ornish published a book on vegetarian food, and who wrote that book? He went to the main chefs of restaurants in the United States, guys that are famous to make food there, and then he said, "I want you to prepare your menu here for me, lasagna, whatever. But you cannot use your ingredients. I will give you the list of ingredients. You prepare with this." And then I used to have that book, but was one of the best. Not all Ornish stuff is our stuff, because I think he used a little bit of fish oil and fish sometimes. But anyways, that's the secret. So if you want to promote a good food, you have to you have to be tasteful. Otherwise, nobody's going to eat. Yeah. Yeah. So is it? But you see here that most of them are lacto-ovo, a little bit are vegan, and then you have the other two category here.
What's pesco?
Pesco is fish vegetarians. I remember a pastor in my church, I asked him, "Are you vegetarian?" And then he said, "Well, considering that 80% of the food in my diet comes from vegetables, I am vegetarian. So the other 20%, I don't know what's there." But so among the African Americans, there's even a lower amount of vegetarians. So semi-vegetarian are those that eat once in a while. So they don't consider themselves vegetarian, but they don't eat meat every day. So if you consider these, I mean, the group is not that bad. Okay, so then they come statistics here that we have now comparing to the type of diet that they follow. So this is... I think I mentioned that if you are not vegetarian, this category, compared to those that are vegan, there is a difference of 30 pounds here in your weight. with the same, approximately same size, same high, with an age, approximate age of 60. So the same thing here for men. So as you use less of those, you have a lower weight. Why is that? Why do you think there is a difference? Why vegetarians would? Okay, that's one cause. Fruits and vegetables, lower cause. But some. I think that's the main thing. When once you are here in these categories here, you are more vegetarian. You are more concerned about health. Here you are not, and then even though some are here, lacto-ovo vegetarian, they might not be that concerned. But even though there is a difference between being ovo lacto-ovo and vegan, that is significant here. So it's still better to go in lower levels there. In blacks, in African Americans, we have the same difference mostly, even a little more accentuated in women than in men. And you see here, the lacto-ovos have more weight than the ones that are PESCO. So PESCO and lacto-ovo are very close there. So it means that, these guys here are PESCO and lacto-ovo. Okay? They are not just PESCO. You see, I'm not sure if you understood. This guy, they just don't eat fish. But this guy, they don't eat, mostly they don't eat red meat and chicken, but they eat the rest. Question?
I was just going to say, 153 pounds still is a little heavy for
me. Don't you think,
for that height?
For that high? Yeah. But remember, this is postmenopause women. Postmenopause women, the weight is... And these are Americans, okay? Welcome to America. So now they measure body fat index, body mass index, that I already mentioned what is that. So it will be the weight in kilograms over the height in meters. And then they made the same comparison. You see that vegans are lower weight. For white males also, this is white females, white males, black, African-Americans, females, African-American, female. Here the difference is not that big, between vegan, even vegan and lacto-ovo are not different here. But for males, the difference is big compared to all types of... So dietary status and disease. So now they compare what happened here. The closer participants were to being vegetarian or vegan, the lower risk of diabetes, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, metabolic syndrome. So that's what we want to see. Cholesterol. That's one thing very interesting. There is no much difference between vegan and lacto-ovo in terms of cholesterol here. And the difference between PESCO and non-vegetarian are really big. But this one, it didn't show any difference. So it shows some... The concept here, it might be that it's not that animal food will increase the cholesterol here, but it looks like how healthy is your diet. I believe if they do a vegan or lacto-ovo, they should classify another here. Another category would be healthy diet. Even a lacto-ovo can be healthy if you don't abuse, if you don't eat three times a day. But you use pizza once a month or whatever in a party. Well, I'm not pushing for that, but I'm saying that I don't remember when I ate my last pizza. I don't use
it. In other words, if you're a vegan and then once a month you eat cheese, your cholesterol is not going to improve that much in
I mean, increase, you mean? Yeah, increase. You mean increase or improve?
It's not going to lower if a vegan if you're cheating occasionally.
Well, that's not what's saying here, but you are disputing this, is that right?
No, I'm just saying a vegan will not lower his cholesterol if he's cheating.
Ah, now, yeah. Yeah. Now I got it. Now you are in the way here. Yeah. But we are not pushing for that. Because the argument that Hans Dill and all of these guys use is that one, this stuff might be addictive. If you go to that once in a while, you might stay there. So you have to balance that. And it's I don't believe on that. I don't eat. My thing is that I don't eat in my house. I don't eat those things. I am completely vegan. But if I have to go to a party or if I have to go to a restaurant and sometimes I have to make a big fuss to not eat and this and this and this and this and this. I remember I was in it was my son's engagement, and then the pastor came there and the pastor was vegan. And all the pizzas were not vegan, and he created a big fuss. They have to cook a special pizza for this guy without, so only with vegetables, and took a long time. And so I thought, goodness grace! I mean, for just once, forget about that, or scrap the cheese or whatever you do there, but don't make a big fuss on that, because this will turn people away from you. They say, well, you see, this guy is so fanatic that he cannot socialize with us. Jesus Christ came to this world and he ate fish. That's the argument that they use to be pesco vegetarian, by the way, and to not be vegetarian. So, but I believe Jesus Christ is the same Jesus Christ that is promoting us to be vegetarian. So don't take it wrong. But the thing is that we have to adjust things and well, but this is my opinion. But you listen and you decide by yourself. Hypertension. In whites, vegan, you see the difference here. Now we have the big difference now. It's half of the level. So someone was mentioned that one of you, that we should start a hypertension clinic. If you go by the DASH diet, I mentioned what's DASH diet already here, that they push for 8 to 10 servings of vegetables, and that will make a difference here, no doubts about that. But this is in whites. In African Americans, the difference is not big. And by the way, African Americans have more hypertension than whites. Okay, what's the characteristics of vegans? They sleep more. They watch less TV. They consume less saturated fat. Eat more fruits and vegetables, eat fruits with a low glycemic index. Beans, legumes, and nuts. You know, they put in the article beans and legumes, and I like that. Because they are just emphasizing the same thing. It's not just beans, you have to use legumes, and then legumes and legumes. But in fact, those are the same. And I believe I like this because is what we are. I even haven't read this before I start being Dr. Bean. Not Mr. Bean, okay? Dr. Bean. For those that know, I present Mr. Bean in Hong Kong, and I made a lecture about that, and people love it because I put the guy there. Then I came to America, and I put the guy on the presentation, and people look at me, who is that? So if you're not British oriented, you don't know much about Mr. Bean. That is a comedian. I think you, yeah. Physical and mental quality. Advanced report better quality of life than U.S. norms. So what is the quality of life that they report in this questionnaire? So you see here that the black Adventists and non-black Adventists, they have, both of them, better quality of life than the U.S. norm in general. So physical health, also for males, a better quality. Mental health, again, for both of them, a better quality. For males, mental health, superior quality than the normal population. And that's the summary. Health advantages are more conforming advances over many years is remarkable. Vegans and lacto-ovo-vegetarian have less obesity, low blood pressure, high cholesterol, and fewer lifestyle disease. This is a very preliminary study because we don't have much publication on that yet. The causes are not all understood, but dietary factors are clearly important. So you see here that for blood pressure, the best way is vegan. So that's a good point. The vegetarian dietary habit is broadly protective. This is due to absence of meat and also ester, fruits and vegetables and nuts. The results of acting advantages are open to all. That's what they, if you go, you have the website there and they have this phrase. And that's our business here. This is not for us to keep to us. This is for us to go to the community and promote it. And when we do so, what you can do, I will not stay there because you know I like this thing. Tell your neighbors what to do. I have this video, but I'll try later on if we see if we can have. Because I was in the halls here and I was getting internet, so, but they block some place. They block. So, anyways. The video that I had today was about Dan Buettner. Who is Dan Buettner? No recalls? Dan Buettner. I think you are confounding with somebody else, but he came here.
He came here and spoke about his work.
Yeah. Yeah. Dan Buettner was the Blue Zone guy. He was the one that invented the Blue Zone idea. What's Blue Zone? It's places in the world that they have less, that they have longevity. People are living longer. And then he went to Sardinia in Italy. He went to Okinawa in Japan. And then he went to Loma Linda. And then in Loma Linda, he was reporting this. And so he attested that our lifestyle is a good one. Then after that, he published a book. Dan Buettner. I will put the name here for you to buy that book. I want you to buy that book. Every single one of you should have that book. And I will tell you the reason for that. Blue zones are the, let's see here. Blue zones means places in the world with a lot of percentage of centenarians. The people that live around 100 years. If you can copy, I think this is in your handout, so don't worry much about that. This one is, this address here is in your handouts, but this is where you can watch the video. But what I want you to buy is the Blue Zones, and then the name is that Lessons from People That Live the Longest in the Earth, or something like that. And the author is Dan Buettner. I'm not sure if it's two T's, but I'll risk two T's. Maybe not. Okay, so I want you, how much was that?
Less than $10.
Yeah, so go there. Where was that?
Which book?
The one just before Dr. Neil Lennon.
You don't have the book there for any chance. You don't have with the book with you.
I just left it in my room.
Yeah. When you open the book, a little bit in the middle of this book, because this guy was not Adventist, okay? In the middle of this book, you open, there is a picture of Ellen White.
Yeah. And
well, that would be good if you can do. Yeah, thank you. And then it's appreciate that, because this would be something for us to use as a health ministry, something. The most that you can use people from outside that is using our material, or people outside that are talking about us, or material from outside that is confirming what we have, the best. And that's regarding the blue zones.
So
yes, in 2005, he went to these zones and published in the National Geographic. The book is published by the National Geographic. So it is in the same line. And guess what? They are in Iowa. Yeah, you can buy in Amazon.com. Yeah, you just Google and you can buy in Amazon.com. Yeah. He wrote another book now that is Happiness in the Blue Zones or something like that. That's the newest one. But they have a project. This guy is very business-minded. And then I'm not sure if you heard about the Iowa Blue Zone Project. So what they are doing in Iowa, and the governor, anybody from Iowa here? Yeah, I should visit there. The government of the city designed a grant of $28 million for the state to develop blue zones. And he contracted Dan Buettner with his experience of these blue zones to promote these lifestyles in several cities that apply for the Blue Zone Project. So they are developing blue zones in Iowa, because Iowa is really messed up. It's one of the worst. I'm not sure if it's worse than Mississippi. Maybe not in childhood obesity, but the rates of disease and the rates of adult obesity is complicated. It's very high there, and so they said, well, we will turn this around. And then they contract with Dan Buettner, and they are doing this big grant. There is a Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and three or four health insurance that are together in this grant, promoting this in the state. So isn't that something amazing? Now they are. It's a shame on us that we are still. People go to Loma Linda and say, "Okay, let's approve McDonald's here because we are not speaking up." But again, it's not just Loma Linda. We should go and we should do more for our communities. And we are figuring it out, and that's what I'm involved with McDonald's, because health promotion for years has focused on groups and individuals. And we try to change our behavior, All of a sudden, they put a park in a city and they structure a city close to a supermarket, and they have better results than we have one by one. So that's something interesting. But as public health officials, public health people, we should go with the green movement also. Not be maybe activists, but we should go with them to promote better environment for our neighborhoods. I don't disagree with that. No, they are doing it in Iowa. Mississippi, I think they have to do something, otherwise the state is going to clog. I talked to the other folk there that is going to bring me to Mississippi. He is in another class. He talked to me in the morning and said, well, give me your card. I'm going to bring you to Mississippi to do something to help us. Not just me. He is contracting to several other people. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Because
it's the Adventist Health Study.
Among the Chinese, the Buddhists, they are vegan also. A lot of vegan. But a lot of heart disease, a lot of cancer, a lot of hypertension. They feel vegan.
Yeah, but I mean, do you know what kind of vegan they are? Yeah. I went to the Tao temple in Hong Kong because they asked us to promote. What is happening is that most of the religions there are losing their vegetarian. Most of the monks are using, and then they asked us to go there to promote a little more vegetarian because we have similar. So I preached in the Taoist temple. Can you believe that? And then, but the food that they served was so messed up. All vegan, but I mean, was so much oil. They put everything is so fried and so,
yeah,
it might be.
Well, I don't think most of what you're saying. Well, the vegan and the non-vegan are different from any cholesterol. So, but the vegan cholesterol is from our body, and food from our body, the liver is from
there. Uh-huh. And you saw the comparison about vegan and non-vegan cholesterol. There is no difference. Probably that's the effect. I mean, we are eating. If you are eating more eggs and milk, might not increase that much. As depends on how much oil or fat you are building up. And in my experience, it's not even oil and fat. Most of the cases, weight I already mentioned. Because the best way to drop cholesterol is to decrease 10 pounds in the weight, or 10% of your weight, you will control most of the cholesterol that you have. Oh, they have a small one. I didn't know. My is big. So 799. I think I'm gonna buy these books and we'll sell them because it's. I have my Blue Zone Sabbath School in my church and it's. So this is the guy Dan Buettner. And this is the picture of Ellen White. So when I first took this book and I say, well, this is a review and herald. Yeah, a review and herald. That's then I said, but cannot be. And so we can use in church even to promote, because another issue is how to promote health in our church. This is very good to promote health in our churches, because our churches are getting behind, some of them. And we... Yeah, so I'll pass around it for you. I'll pass around the book, but you give back to her, okay? Okay, let's go back to our lecture. We have two more to go, and we have 2 hours, 1 hour for each one. I need someone to time myself when I finish 1 hour. You have to tell me to stop. Who is going to time? Okay, for 1 hour we finish this one. So let's go, because this will have a lot of discussion. But I would like to start with this story here. Many years ago, I have a girl in my office, Cindy. Her mother brought her to us. She was 10 years old. She had a nodule in her chest. Normally, I would do small surgeries to take nodules, warts, and things like that. But this was not in the breast, was in the chest, in the middle, and very hard thing. And I told her, well, this is not for me. We have to send to the... So I refer her to a surgeon, and it was a lymphoma, non-Hodgkin lymphoma. Non-Hodgkin lymphoma, you know, it's very complicated. She went and performed a surgery in the São Paulo Adventist Hospital. After a couple of days, her mother came with her again to my office after the surgery, and then she asked me for a diet for cancer, because nobody has this diet for cancer. The doctor, no doctors talk about that, unfortunately. So they say, well, you do the surgery and you can eat whatever. And so that's terrible. I told her to follow a diet of fruits and vegetables, the diet that I will promote in the end of this session, the detox diet. So only raw foods for 1 week, and then we start adding a little bit of, but totally vegan, without any animal product. So, and she did, and papaya was the main food that she was eating. After a couple of months, Cindy returned to the surgeon for a follow-up. And so the surgeon was an Adventist surgeon in an Adventist hospital. And then he asked the mother, what is the treatment that she's doing? And she said, Dr. Dos Santos diet. And said, no, forget about that. I'm talking about the oncologist. What did the oncologist said? Because she might need chemotherapy, radiotherapy to, this cancer is not a play. And then he was thinking that she should go for chemotherapy. You must take Cindy right away to São Paulo Cancer Institute. This is not a disease to treat with diet and fruits. She needs chemotherapy, okay? Well, she didn't know better. She went to the hospital. So she went to São Paulo Cancer. What's the name of the institute there? It's close to Adventist Hospital, there is a Hospital do Câncer. It's so Hospital do Câncer. I thought there was another name. Okay, she went to São Paulo Cancer Hospital. And then the oncologist examined Cindy and checked the pathology reports that the surgeon sent. And then he asked, what kind of chemotherapy is Cindy doing? And then she said, no, only the vegan diet of Dr. Dos Santos. They want to put me... He put me in jail for that. And the daughter smiled and said, who is this Dr. Dos Santos? And then he checked again, and then he said, Cindy has a virus, a very serious type of cancer, and the treatment that I have is not going to help at all. Whatever diet she is following, keep it on, and it looks like it's working. Keep it up, huh? So I have to change that. So... for more than 15 years, until now, I haven't heard that, but surgery and diet was the only secret. So this was a good case. I mean, not common case, but not all the cases are like that, but it was a very interesting one. Can diet cure cancer? Well, there is no studies that prove that with evidence, the evidence that we use for prevention, we use for healing. So after you have all of this background, that fruits and vegetables and fruits that prevent angiogenesis, fruits that increase the activity of phase 1 enzymes and block the phase 2 enzymes and help the P53 and help other things, so we might use those, the treatment too, and that's my reasoning. Even though we don't have that evidence in treatment, because maybe we go to jail in this country if we tell a patient not to use chemotherapy and do a vegan diet or whatever. That's why I mentioned to you, we advise them to go for a good diet, no matter what treatment they do. And now we are having evidence that even with chemotherapy, radiotherapy, with a good diet, they might have a help. That's what? Question.
Have you seen any results of a good diet after a person acquires cancer? I don't know if you made that statement, but after they acquire cancer.
Weren't you here? Did you leave the room or... I just told the case here.
That's what I thought. I thought you didn't say that. You just say that after they acquire it, that you see no effects at all on the cancer that they have.
I don't. I think someone is. No, you have to wake up. Not two. I don't know. I mean, do you understand what he's asking you? Am I right? Am I wrong? Am I missing something? Or
I think no? He's asking,
I thought you said that.
Is there any diet that will cure cancer?
I thought you said that.
Yeah, that's what I understood. But I mean, we just showed the case. So
we're the same team.
But what so what we're saying here is that we could not offer a diet as a substitute,
right,
because of the regulations that they have. Should we do that? Shouldn't we do that? And the problem here is the regulations in this country, one. Second is that cancer is a very complicated disease. So we never know which phase the person will turn down or not. Then if you do chemotherapy, most likely they will die. If you don't do chemotherapy, they might die and they might not. But if they do chemotherapy, they die, you are okay. If you don't do chemotherapy and they die, you will go to jail. So that's the situation in the country. So it's messed up, I mean. But that's the... We have the Gerson Therapy Clinic that I will mention something about that. They don't have good evidence of cancer treatment, but they treat stage 4 cancers. And guess where they are now? They were banned from the United States. They are in Tijuana, Mexico. They are in Tijuana, Mexico. They have an office in San Diego, and so they can jump in the border and put the cancer patients there, because in Mexico, nobody will bother you about that. Okay, other causes of cancer. So we have to be careful that sometimes people focus on those things and they forget the ones that are more important. So far, nobody make any evidence, at least in the studies that we know about electrical lines and cancer. Cell phone. Cell phone is a mess. But it's still no evidence in epidemiological studies. There is a couple of studies in Europe that are pushing for that. The WHO is also advising people to be careful, because there is a relationship with one type of cancer I will show. But the thing is that there are two points here. First is that brain cancer is a very rare type of cancer that is not increasing in the epidemic. So to compare to the craziness of using cell phone that is in this country and everywhere, we should have a... in the rates of brain cancer. So that's one thing. The other is that the non-ionizing, because we have ionizing and non-ionizing waves of the cell phone and microwaves are not enough to cause mutations. So we don't have a mechanism that is strong. What the cell phone mostly causes is increased temperature. So when you put here, it will increase the temperature. They have some studies that increase glucose metabolism in this area of the brain. But even with that, it does not match with the evidence. So the International Agency for Research on Cancer, that is the WHO, is classified radio frequency, as we have in cell phones, are possibly carcinogenic to humans. So this is very complicated. Based on limited evidence from human studies, limited evidence from studies from radio frequency energy and cancer in rodents, and weak mechanism of what are everything that I mentioned here. If you go to the site of National Cancer Institute and then you put cellular phone on cancer, you have a list of that, of failure on this because of this study. So maybe you say, well, who is paying for this research and who is not paying? And I don't know, but at least that's the stance now, that we don't have evidence enough. I mentioned about that. In the evidence... In the United States, brain cancer is, they have 22,000 new diagnoses and 13,000 deaths for brain for 2011. But it hasn't been increased, so that's the point. Well, compared to other cancers, it's rare. We are talking about millions of cases here, but... But what they are saying is that this is not, this is being like the same level for years and years and years. So that's the main point. But is rare to make statistics, because these cases are spread out around the country, and then not very many things in common with the patients. Well, I mentioned about an ionizing and non-ionizing, that radar, microwave ovens, and other sources are no consistent evidence that these increase cancer risk, because they don't have a mechanism enough to produce mutations. So, if you don't believe on that, if you think that, hey, this causes cancer, what you should do? What they advise the WHO is that you start do less, use your cell phone less, and I even left my cell phone in my room, so that's good. Use a hands-free device, which places more distance between the phone and the head of the user. And I like this one, but we'll create a mess with your pastors, because they are creating a hands-free device that are little jewelry type, and the girls will like it. But we'll make something on. But anyways, that's the advice. And I think the other advice is children. I mean, children should not have cell phones. Excuse me. What if they have cell phones? I mean, they should have just for emergency and not... today we see children that they are, I mean, kids. I mean, six or less years old, they are with their phones and talking. The good thing, though, is that they are texting more than anything else. That's good. The most that they text, maybe we should have phones just for texting. And it would be much better. I don't understand why they are texting. I mean, it's much easier to talk on the phone, but you see some weird... Yeah, you can be in church. That's a good one. I can be in church and ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. Well, I think if texting in church, I don't think that is it's bad. So now you got me. I frequently text in church. Oh, yeah. So is it a sin? Well... Yeah, but I mean, if someone calls me and I have to respond, I mean, if not a patient, but a wife. I think it's, I think you should not be too strict. I mean, I don't stay the whole sermon texting, okay? I just say yes. Boom, point here, and that's it. Yeah, so or no, and that's it. So we don't need to be so strict. I mean, that's a problem. I mean, if you eat a little bit, you are in trouble. So, but I mean, kids are doing that all the time. Kids are playing video games all the time. So you have to know that. I mean, you have to go ahead. Yeah, many people are fearful for that. But so far we don't have. It might have some effects. It might not be on the cancer level. It might be other influence, mental, psychological, whatever. I have one guy that have nasopharyngeal cancer in Hong Kong, and he used to live in a building that have at least 10 phone antennas in there, because the companies rented the place to put the antennas to transmit. And they are saying, well, this is what is caused his cancer.
We have a health center in Hong Kong, the Adventist College.
Yeah.
And then on top of the building.
Yeah, that's the same.
You saw that, right?
Yeah.
More than 50 or 100 of those antennas.
Yeah, that's the same.
And then the people come and join the health program and say, look at it.
Okay, let's continue. I mean, we have to go with it. Magnetic fields and cancer, electric lines, and so this is what there is no connection with cancer. And then even in Long Island, that, remember I mentioned about breast cancer in Long Island, that might have relationship with DDT and PCB, but not with the lines. But TV can cause cancer. Watching TV, electronics, video games, and computer are sedentary activities that increase obesity. Obesity increases the risk of cancer, ovary, uterine, prostate, colon, rectum. So we have evidence that are very clear, indirect. But when I was in school, they used to present a slide like that, that breast cancer increase as sales, TV sales increase in a country. And then they said, see, this is the problem with statistics. If you do some like that, you cannot prove anything because it might be a coincidence. Now we know that it might be true. Because if they have more TV, they will do less exercise. So let's talk about treatment. So this is one charred cartilage. The Anderson Cancer Center in Texas, this is one of the biggest centers in the country to treat cancer. And then they made an analysis of people with that, and then they didn't find any positive effect of cancer shark cartilage. Lateral was done in, I think it was in California, also promoted by American Cancer Society. By the way, when they start doing this treatment, they want to check people that was using Lyotril. So they went to the health pharmacists and brought all the Lyotril that they have and brought to the laboratory, the pills and the extracts, and they found no Lyotril there. No. That's the problem with our supplements. Some of supplements are fake. So they have to go, because Lyotril comes from apricot, from the seeds of apricot. They have to go to farms and extract the Lyotril from that and produce their own medication, put in a placebo control, and then made the test in rats and things like that. Don't forget that if you eat seeds of apricots, it can be poisoning. Okay, so it has some poison there. Anyways, it didn't help. Gerson therapy. Gerson's therapy is the one that I mentioned, Gerson's Cancer Center or Gerson's Cancer Institute. They have a vegetarian diet. They use 13 cups of fresh and fruit juice per day. They have some minerals and supplements. And this is just a summary, because the treatment is a little more complicated than that. And they use flaxseed, and then they coffee and enema. Scientifically they don't have cancer in general, but they have individual cases that are healed, and mostly they have stage 4 cancers that were healed. So I give a little bit of credit for this, because in fact, stage 4, what you can do for stage 4? It's like metastatic type of cancer. I mean, they will die no matter what. I have one of my friends that I will show you the case here somewhere, that he died from colon cancer. And when I have a title, I am a certified nutrition specialist. When I did my test, I talked to the president of the College of American Nutrition, American College of Nutrition, ACN. And then he knew this guy. And he said, he came to my clinic, and I gave him the treatment for cancer that we promote, and I gave the supplements and all the Chinese herbs, but his wife didn't agree with that. He said that was not scientific. The guy was stage 4, and they refused this treatment. And then he said, well, but that's the point. I mean, once you don't have any other hope, when you might try those things, and if it's natural, why not? I don't see any problem with that. So that's my point, and that's the point that many physicians miss, because they say, no, it has to be scientific, it has to be evidence. Well, what is the evidence for chemotherapy? I mean, is a hard cause to make evidence for that. So my cousin went to the Gerson, to the Gerson Center. He was 24 years old. He has a kidney cancer that was inoperable. And then he went there, he recovered, and he didn't do any surgery. And he is alive until today in Brazil. He came from Brazil here, and he is... But he is vegetarian, total vegetarian. He follows a strict diet, and he is doing very well with that. So, see? No, he didn't have surgery. This guy, he was not my... on that time, I was just graduate, so I didn't have much. And I'm not sure if I would send him there, but... Yeah, because in this case, yeah, it would not be operable even that. So, but here alternative would be chemotherapy. I think he gave up. Yeah, I agree. I talked to an oncologist in Loma Linda about that one time, and then I said, well, can we check on that? Can we do some research and get it? And then he said, well, it's too hard to get cancer patients. I like your study, but it has you have to have money, you have to have this and this and this and this. He put all the blocks on me and said, okay. And his wife died from cancer. Couple of months up. He was not Adventist here. But anyways, so now we have a picture here for our clinic, that we have our doctor here that is from the clinic. She is from the clinic here. She's a doctor there from... I forgot her first name. We did Gerson's therapy there in the beginning. We are not doing that, but the treatment is still vegetarian and vegan and very good. But the thing is that most of the cases that we got there, I mean, were very, very advanced cases, very hard to make treatment. They are amputated and they are already exhausted from chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and surgeries. But is your clinic here as it was? I should update this. This was taken in... I don't know, I mean, how many years ago. By the way, we used to have a postcard like that I made, and we promote that. You have a question? Okay. No, I have a modern picture, okay? This is the clinic now. Yeah, so it's much... Well, I don't know if they treat cancer itself as it is. I think what happened... In my time, we started having so many people dying there, and then people didn't want to go anymore. So I'm going to go there, and I'm doing a change on diet, and I'm trying to change my lifestyle. All of a sudden, there is a coughing passing around here. It sounds very bad for a lifestyle. So I was the director of the clinic for 7 years. This clinic here, I was the director of this clinic for 7 years. They die in my hands. I mean, people die there. People die in those places. So,
you see, this is the problem. We shouldn't allow that to discourage us.
That's right.
Because the people,
yeah, but I mean, it's not a discourage.
Their immune system was completely not.
Yeah, but I mean, you have to understand the situation. I mean, if you have, you have to focus on one or another case. So. Even UT Pines have a hard time with that. They have to do that, but they have to do it in the hidden because I was called in the Conselho Regional de Medicina, the federal state Council of Medicine, 2 times on that time. Krushi didn't go, but I went 2 times there because of these natural treatments.
In Brazil?
Yeah, because the general physicians, they don't agree with that. Well, anyways, I should not stay much on that. What I'm saying is that you have to have a system, and then you have to balance things. If we focus too much on people that are dying, we might lose the others. So we have to make this balance. So where should we specialize? I believe if we have a center like Loma Linda, and they are open to do that, we could have, because it needs a little more hospitalization when you have terminal patients. And then, and that's what we decide to do. Well, I don't want any patients to die here. And it came to a point that I would tell the family, all, he can treat here, be treated here, but he might die. You have to be prepared for that. And say, what? I bring here not to die. And say, well, so then they would not bring it. They say, well, but he might die or she might die. You have to be aware of this. And then I save a little bit of the environment. But I believe this clinic is still on because we put a position there. I say, let's focus on people that are still, I still have chances. Yeah. That's true. São Paulo is about 30 miles from 40 miles from the capital, the state capital. Okay, vitamins. Well, we don't have any evidence that vitamins will help in cancer. What I'm talking about is high doses of vitamins, mega vitamins. But again, I am open for that. Even though we don't have studies, it does not mean that they might not be, they might not work, because we see that, like the vitamin C, with Dr. Linus Pauling, he ended up healing everything with that, and then they turned down everything that he did, and he was a recipient of Nobel Prize. But people don't buy on this thing. But we should not be that critic, because, you know, why we take vitamin C when we are with a cold? We take 2 to 5 grams, and we, most of us will improve on that. So there is something for treatment that it might be good. But this we need more time to go over. Malnutrition, we know that malnourishment or malnutrition can decrease the immune system and might cause cancer. And then we talk about that beta-carotene in pills might increase the risk of cancer. I mentioned that those vitamins here, lack of those vitamins might be related to cancer. I don't know. They mentioned about iron, but I'm not sure about that. But it might be because if you don't have iron, you might not build up your, at least the red blood cells. So too much of a good thing and too little of a good thing, it might be a problem. Go ahead. $30,000? 30,000 is not much. They give 50,000. But then they solve the problem.
I don't know, but they just started with that.
He solved the problem?
No.
No? Yeah, he died anyway, so. But it is something that can be used. Yeah. Now, I already talked about that a lot. I already talk a lot about vitamin D already. Yeah. There is some evidence for that. Okay, regular exercise produce weight control and reduce the risk of breast cancer. By the way, this is our group that did New Start in Thailand. And this is my friend Aaron Liu. You know him, eh? Aaron Liu. And this is Becky Moon. So this is my group when I was in Hong Kong. I have a hard time with this guy here. He did the New Start, and Mr. Wu, No, Mr. I forgot his name. But he was taking blood pressure pills. And his blood pressure was 90 by 60. And I told him, we have to cut down the pills. And he said, no, I cannot stop the pill. The doctor said that I'm going to die if I cut the pill. And we fight. And he was so asleep and so down. But when he ended up agreeing with me, and then he improved. And in 1 week that we stayed there, he almost controlled his blood pressure with just a little bit of pill. And that's what we see there also in Brazil, in the clinic. And also in Weimar and Yuchi Pines and Wildwood, that the blood pressure is the one that will drop easier. And after you go for a walk, you can measure blood pressure. I have one guy in my clinic in Loma Linda. He came and he has 140 over 90. And then when I was talking to him, and we can use that, we went to a walk because one of the tests, you have to walk 1 mile. When he came back, we talked about that, and then I said, you know, if I measure your blood pressure now, it's going to be lower. So that's the importance of exercise. I want to emphasize exercise. And he said, okay, let's measure. And it was 130 over 80. And then he said, you got me now. I am going to start exercising now. I'm going to even go walking home now. So sometimes we need to use those things to help our patients. I already showed this slide. Disease that causes cancer, we already covered that. Foods that are related to prevention of cancer. So we have garlic. And one of the thing that I read was the two cities in China that they compare the risk of stomach cancer with the city that eat more, they smells more garlic in the neighborhood. They have lower rates of stomach cancer compared to those that don't use garlic. They invented, it's a joke, okay? A new children's food, half orange juice and half garlic. The baby grows healthy in both, but it's easy to find them at night. Just go by dip. This is an old study, but they compare the types of cancers that are related to fruits and vegetables intake. So lack of fruits and vegetables. You see that in 16, this is the number, 15 of 16 studies prove that there is a relationship. And so you have in others. So it's not total on that, but look at pancreas. 11 studies, not 9 show the relationship. Lung cancer even, and prostate cancer didn't show much on this. But probably sometimes it's hard to make these studies because even Americans don't use them that much, fruits and vegetables, so you don't have a way to compare high intake with low intake if the intake is miserable intake. Should use a better word, but... 132 studies over 170 show a relationship. We talk about cabbage that produce antioxidants, increase the GST, that protects against bladder cancer. This one in the cruciferous, they have a protection on this type of gene here that increase the risk of lung cancer. So this is fix the problem if you have more cruciferous. This is other mechanisms for different plants. Even acai from Brazil is a very good. But you don't need to go to Brazil. You don't need to spend a lot of money on this because blueberries and blackberries and prunes might be even stronger. So it's the same level. Shiitake mushrooms are being used against breast, or they reduce the risk of breast and lung cancer. You see, I will not talk much about that because... Oh, this is the antioxidants. I think that's the only time that I'm going to talk about antioxidant death. And I put antioxidants because I was doing a lecture on longevity. But you compare this list with the list of fiber, and you have the same thing. The richest source of antioxidants here are the small berries. Prunes is not a berry, but it's small and dark. Prunes, raisins, blueberries, and blackberries. Then the second one would be the dark green leaves, like kale, spinach, Brussels sprouts, and alfalfa sprouts, and broccoli. So we should have in our diet daily more of these things to help us. And again, in that list, the only animal type of food is eggplant, not eggs, okay? We don't have any animal product here. So if you see the list of fiber, if you see the list of anti-angiogenesis foods, and you see the list of antioxidants, most of them are from the vegetable kingdom. And that's good for us. We have several properties on that, on those foods. Now we go to another way. There is terpenoids that also activate the GST, that is a powerful antioxidant, and they made them more soluble in water. And this might be found in this plant here. Which plant is that?
Mint.
Or peppermint. So we have terpenoids in several seasonings or teas that we use. You might not know all of them, but we have lemongrass. I think one of you mentioned about what the lemongrass, what they are doing in Israel. Israel, with they have a factory of lemongrass that is producing lemongrass for the treatment of cancer, and they are big. They are exporting that, and they are. And lemongrass is really. Is really a good herb. In Brazil, we call saint herb. Saint, because it's saint herb. Or saint grass, capim santo.
We call it fever grass because...
So, yeah. And then we know that lemongrass, it helps to... is a little, I would say, is helps you to sleep, is a little diuretic, is digestive, and then it might have properties against cancer. And I read one study that it might help to drop your cholesterol. On the top of everything is a very rich in antioxidants. So the theory or the advice that we should use more herbal teas, and we have from our tradition, is a good thing. We should go back there. Melissa is Melissa. I don't know. Is a translation, but I don't know. I don't know if we have another name in. It's the family of mint. Yeah, it's the family of mint. By the way, Melissa has a property against herpes, labial herpes. They have one cream that is made with Melissa. You know about the name? Melaleuca. I have a story about Melaleuca to share with you. Anyways, let's go back here. Lemongrass? Well, you can... the best way for me to prepare lemongrass, I introduced lemongrass to Hong Kong. Can you believe that? And I thought lemongrass was native from my country. I cannot believe that. It was not. And because we have so many lemongrass there in south of Brazil, and I say, well, this is ours. When I come to China, herbals original from China and lemongrass was there. And I said, I can't believe that. We use lemongrass in our clinic. We use a lot. And the thing what happened is that the Portuguese went to Macau, and they cross over those things, and then they brought tobacco to China and brought lemongrass to So they spread out all where they went, and so we. The best way is if you have the fresh leaves, you smash them as much as possible. and then you put hot water and stay there for 5 minutes, and you have a good tea. You can, if you don't smash them, it's gonna be hard to get the oils there. But if you cook a lot, lemongrass in China though is not used as a tea. They use in cooking. They use the lower part of it, and they use Thai cuisine, and even in China, they use more of this for making soups and put a taste in soup. So when I brought the tea, and I say, well, I'm going to teach the Chinese to use their own herbs. It was funny. It was funny because we made a pot like that in my church, as I have a health evangelism group, a pot like that, and we serve lemongrass for everyone. And they like it. They like it. It lowered blood pressure also. They use the stem, yeah. The grass, I believe the grass has more things, but I cannot for sure. Jamaica? That's good. Okay, let me just share you one information. This guy here, Dan Buettner, visited two more blue zones that he found after he wrote the book. He visited, one is in Costa Rica, he called Nicoya. And then very interesting, and I am looking now to find a Nicoya Seventh-day Adventist. I might visit that country to see if they have a Seventh-day Adventist church. They have a college, they have a school there in Nicoya, and so maybe we bridge here two blue zones, the Loma Linda one and the South America, Central America one. But the interesting thing is that they went to, and the lifestyle is almost the same. It's fruits and vegetables and exercise and nature and things like that. They don't use meat at all. But then they went to Greece. They went to Ikaria. Ikaria is an island in Greece. In Ikaria, I will write here for you to know. I thought it was Ikaria, but it is Ikaria. Ikaria. And then in Ikaria, they found that they drink more goat milk, they eat goat cheese, they don't eat much meat, but they use a lot of herbal teas. And then they said, well, this is a characteristic of this. They have very low rates of hypertension and strokes. And they said, most of these herbal teas, chamomile, mint, and things, wild cheese, they are diuretic, he was the mechanism. And then they are direct, they help them to control their blood pressure. Of course, they are going up and down the hills, they are vegetarian, they're supposed to have low blood pressure. But he mentioned about an effect of using those kind of teas. Other herbals that are having anti-cancer properties, if you know this guy from Andrews, he has a couple of books that... Winston Craig, maybe you have something for sale, but he is good on that. Always researching the anti-cancer herbals and foods. Here we have a lemongrass, and the process that I just show you. Mostly there is a principle that I used to teach in for my clinics in the patients. If the herbal is fresh, the best way is to smash it and put hot water. If the herbal is dry, and then you better put either in a concoction and leave there for a couple of hours to absorb the oils, or you boil a little bit more. Wherever I go, I have this in my backyard. And that's another thing. We should have more natural things in our backyard, not just vegetables, but those things. I mean, if you have mint, if you have this, if you have... How many of you have charcoal in your house? Oh, I'm preaching to the choir here. Because sometimes I go, I ask people in the church, I mean, do you have charcoal? And people say, what is charcoal?
Yeah.
So we have to pass this to our church and to our community, because this is something that we have to have in our house. And I have a good experience to share with you with charcoal, but we already talked about that. We 10 minutes still? Okay. 10 minutes to finish that session. We already talked about that. And the cruciferous, I mentioned that. Isothiocyanates that block the enzyme, phase 1 enzyme, or phase 2 enzymes. Chili pepper. This is a little confused now. We don't have much research on that, but I have a hard time to talk about that with the Hispanics. Yeah. And now with the Jamaicans and Caribbeans, I'm going to have the same hard time. In Brazil, I mean, north of Brazil, they use more pepper. South of Brazil, they don't use pepper. So I am from the south, so I'm okay. The point is that in the study, in the book, if you go to the book, that's the situation. It might be 1 week cause of cancer in the stomach. But, I don't have it. But it has a weak protection against bladder cancer. So, you have one good and one bad. One good and one bad. So I don't like when it's good and bad. So if you go to the Spirit of Prophecy, she mentioned that we should avoid those spicy things, mostly if the...
Huh? Things that are hot when they're cold.
Yeah, yeah. And then I was talking about that last time, and then one guy said, well, she was against the black pepper, but red pepper is another story. Well, in fact, there is no... She was against pepper at all. I mean, I think she was against this idea that we have to have a very strong burning sensation. Oh, you got in the right time. Just hold there. We have a picture time now. Okay, just hold on there. We are going to have that. The point here is that, so if you go to the Spirit of Prophecy, I don't see any place that she said, and then I went to research that she said, you don't need to use black pepper, but red pepper is okay. I don't see that there. I saw an idea that is too spicy, avoid that. So you are not going to die if you eat pepper. But it's something that we should not use every day. We should not build up this in our diet. So.
And she was saying that they have found the operation of patients seems to stay on the lining of the bowel and can actually absorb it to the bowel itself. And that's why they were recommending that it's best to avoid it.
Best to avoid it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but anyways, in my opinion, I would say to you, frankly, use a lot of bell pepper. Okay. And green peppers. Yeah, the cayenne pepper is the one that I am not signing up for that. But that's my opinion. I am a anti-pepper guy. But maybe I have to tell you, and then I hide myself here, but... yeah, please, don't use... one day I was doing this lecture in a Hispanic church, and then the ladies, before I start talking, they said, oh, don't come here to talk against pepper. And say, it's going to be a little hard for me. But I put that for you. I believe that is not good. I mean, but I don't... if I eat once in a while, I don't have a problem with that. Okay, let's set up for a picture here. Let's see what I have more here. I have to do that one still. I have to finish with that story. So should we go in the front here? What do you think? Let's go to the front here and set up an environment here. That's good.
A class picture.
So let's. Hey Wes, you think we will go by this way? I don't know if he can take from there because this table is gonna be messed up. Huh? Hey, Mr. Wes. But you can go from that side. Okay. Well, I sit with the ladies in the front here.
That's because the people in the front, they want the massage.
Can you pass this there? And so maybe we have...
I borrow the lens so I can go.
You have to accommodate behind the chairs mostly, otherwise it's going to be too wide. Well, the photographer will say what is the best there. Is it okay? Don't worry much. But then he's gonna be behind this. Yeah. He said that everybody is in the picture. Is that so? We want those pictures that people are not ready, then we...
I'm going to try another one.
That's good.
That one was,
yeah. Very good.
Can we have copies, please?
Tofu. Tofu. Better cheese.
No tofu.
Tofu cheese.
There?
Is that right?
That's that one.
Yeah, that's good. Well, that one. No, you should have three, no?
Yeah. Oh, come on.
Let's take one more with the group. So just in case. Because that first one,
that
the people
one?
are Okay, that's the second?
Yeah, I just have the two.
Yeah, but the first one, people are moving around. See,
yeah.
People are... So let's take one more just to... You can raise it. One more. Okay, one more. Thank you. Hey, guys.
So you just compose a picture?
Yeah. The Lord had me doing something. So. That's the last class?
That's the last class.
Everything's finished up?
No. We are not done yet. Just want to stay here. Okay, guys, let's go. Five minutes. So this is 5 minutes, and this is... I might need to go more on this one because I have so important here. And then the other one, we cut short the other ones. Okay? Well, this is my mother. She was in Hong Kong Adventist Hospital visiting me in 2006. But this is her name, Antonietta. And then she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and she was 79 or 77. Then she was in Brazil, and I was in China. And then I told her, yeah, maybe she called me and say, well, what should I do? She asked me, and I said, well, follow whatever they are prescribing there, but I will do the diet, okay? And she responded, she said, what will that be? And then I told her, well, we have a detox or healing diet. There's lots of fruits and vegetables, whole grains, legumes, roots, nuts, seeds. So that would be wonderful. And then I said, oh, hold on. No meat, no chicken, no fish, no eggs, no milk, no cheese, no sugar, no sweets, no fat, no oil, no white rice, no white bread, no pepper, no vinegar, no alcohol, no coffee, no soft drinks, no ice cream, and lots of fun. What? I might not be able to follow that. But she went. She went to surgery. She went to chemotherapy. Didn't lose her hair. And didn't have much pain. She recovered rapidly. And then 7 years, 7 years after the surgery, she is 89, by the way. In April, she is going to be 89. And then she is... Yeah. Yeah. She is eating okay. She is still falling. She's a little slow now. But I'll bring my daughter is going to get married in August, so she is going to come for the celebration, and then I found a boyfriend for her in Hong Kong. This was in the Wax Museum, okay? So okay, so this is the story of my mentor. It's another point that I want to make in cancer. This guy was vegetarian, exercise, lots of vegetables, not smoking, not drinking, good lifestyle, very bright professor, one professor that everybody likes. But he was full of stress. Lots of class research, teaching, traveling everywhere. Writing papers, revising papers, no time for anything. He was in charge of several different positions in the school and in committees. But he was diagnosed with colon cancer, and 1 year he was dead. Sorry about this phrase here, but... But sometimes we think that is diet, sometimes we think that is something in our lifestyle, exercise, and we forget that here we might mess up too. And our immune system is shut down when we are too stressed out. Okay, I will not go there, but I want to just talk a little bit of what we promote is the detox diet. So this is what I promote for the patients with any disease, but if they want something for cancer. The only thing is diabetes. I have a little hard time, but for everybody else is good. And then it's 3 to 7 days with only raw foods, fruits, vegetable, fruit juice. Vegetable juice is one portion of 1 8-ounce cup that would be, for you, would be 250 mls if you don't... if you are not familiar with ounces, and plenty of water, 6 or more cups per day. So we used to do, I'm not sure if we still do that in the clinic, yeah? Yeah. We used to do that a lot for our patients in our clinic in Brazil. What kinds of fruits? If you can do organic, better. Avoid the nut or the avocado family that are a little heavy on fat for this period, 1 week. And then berries family better. Be careful with blueberry. Blueberry should be wild blueberry because it's very rich in pesticides. Hard skin, if you don't have an organic option, and those are the best fruits for hard skin. And then dark green vegetables better. Drink slowly and eat slowly. And then you can add one more portion if you are weak or if you are tired. Sometimes we add this to improve the detox. As is a detox, we add for 1 or 2 days or 3 days, we put the herbs, and we put some laxative there that are mostly those two. It's sometimes a little bit of diuretics. You have this written in your handouts. I'm not going to state that. But if you have a problem with the bowel movement, so you better... Oranges with pulp is one of the best, and second by prunes or prune juice is very good for that. Then the second week, you start adding a little bit of nuts, and then we space the meals for 4 hours. You put dried fruits, but not those that are added sugar. You put avocado and those that has a little vegetable fat, and then you can add some cooking vegetables there, and then the third week you follow a normal diet. So this is an example of a vegetarian diet. Here's one example of a maintenance diet. So you don't need that. I don't need to spend time with that. And then another thing that we advise is for long term is good to have fasting once in a while, or every 2 weeks, or once a month, or just fasting with fruits is good for our health. So for us, usually we don't do that. But I have done that in the last 2 years, and I'll tell you that. Not frequent that, but one day I say, well, today is not my day of eating. People say, let's go for lunch. No, I'm going to stay with fruits or just detox. And then it's good for us. You feel very good. Avoid desserts. Use fruits instead. So this is something that we have to promote more. And juices and drinks. And drink. Do you have to have any precautions? Well, people should not exercise too much on this kind of diet. So that's one thing. I remember we still have the aerobic pista aerobica in San Roque. We have an aerobic trail there that we put our patients to go there, and so most of them are doing this. And so I have this huge lady that African American with high blood pressure, with medications, and she went to the aerobic trail, and I told her, please, no running. You just go and walk there. You can walk fast. But there is a group of young fellows that were running, and then they passed one time through her, and then when they passed by her the second time, they say, hey, come with us. I mean, you are okay. She went with them, and in the middle of this, she fainted. Poof. So we went there with the doctor, with the nurses, and we put her. We call a cardiologist, and then we did an EKG, and so everything was fine. So she recovered. Not to another day, she was okay, and then she went back to the aerobic trail. And then I told, well, now you learned the lesson. No running. You just go for a walk here. No, don't worry. It's going to help your blood pressure. First turn was good. The second turn, the guys already passed. Hey, let's go. And she went then, half of the, boom, fainted again. I say, my goodness, what's going on here? So it's just for you to know that sometimes people will go with the majority in a program. You have to be very careful. In programs, you have to be very careful because people will have some of those things and you have to be prepared. You have to have emergency things and... Fortunately, I used to run a running club in Hong Kong for the 7 years that 6 years that I've been there, and I didn't have no incident at all, even during the competition. But one day, one guy came to our club later because we have 6 months of program. He came in the middle of the program. He entered, and then he went to a race. I was not even in the race, and then he has a hyperthermia because it was too hot. He was not drinking water. He fainted, and then they were saying, "Oh, what's happening?" The bomb. First of all, you didn't sign for our group, so you are going with them, so you didn't prepare for that. And secondly, you are in Hong Kong. You are not in Alaska or Canada. Hong Kong is a very humid place. You have to drink water. You must drink water in this. In this place. So many times you have this thing because people go for exercise without eating, another thing. So you don't need to eat a big meal, but you cannot do exercise if you don't have something there to burn. And they don't drink water. especially in hot places. So supplementation, what we advise? Vitamin B12. If people want to take calcium, I don't go more than 500 milligrams if they ask my opinion. I believe you can go by the foods, but if you have to take pills, then it's better to use this with vitamin D than use that alone. Another thing that people forget is that as I am vegetarian, I don't need the physician, and that's not right. We need to do checkups. We need to, and mostly we have to adjust medication. If they go on a program like that, they will drop medications for cholesterol, for blood pressure, for whatever. Oh, now I like what I'm going to talk. I mean, maybe some of you already read that, but I asked last time, what is bathing, forest bathing? And then one lady said, it's taking a shower in the forest. That's a cool one, but what I'm talking about is this. Forest bathing, increase the natural killer activity and the number of NK cells and intracellular anti-cancer proteins in lymphocytes. What is that? It's a time breathing the volatile substance called phytoncides that are from the mostly from the trees, which are antimicrobial volatile organic compounds derived from trees, such as the pine tree and limonene. This is not lemon tree. By the way, lemon tree and lemon has this. But this is other trees, wild trees have the same. So they did a test here with 12 healthy male subjects in Japan. This is the average age. And then they went to a trip in there to a forest or then Tokyo. And then they walk in the forest. They stay there for these days. And then they compare the blood after they stay in the forest and what happened when they were in the city of Tokyo. So they check the time here before and after the trip to the city, and before and after the trip to the forest, and before and after the trip to the city. And then what they found is that there was increase in AK activity, increasing numbers of NK. Then they have the increase of this substance, perforin, granulin, granzyme, AB expressing cells, and the decrease of adrenaline in their urine, probably because you have less stress, so you don't have much adrenaline circulation. The increase on NK activity was lasted for more than 7 days after the trip. So this means that we should go at least once a week to the forest if we don't live in close to one. Then when they went to the city, nothing happened. So they mentioned, this is the citation, this pilot study illustrates the profound healing effect of nature. So isn't that something amazing that we have these effects there for us? We just need to go there. And Ellen White mentioned about the properties of the trees for healing. So there we go. That's why our hospital should not be in the city. But anyways. And then the exciting thing, that's what I asked more time, because we have to finish this part because it's very interesting. We are going to talk about spontaneous regression of cancer. So what is happening besides exercise, besides diet, besides fruits and vegetables, we have to keep track of our minds. And the minds of a cancer patient might determine if this person is going to die or this person is going to survive. So approximately 50% of these cases here could be related to six types of cancer. So those are cases observed in the literature that have a spontaneous regression. Simply the cancer disappeared with the time. So we are going to study a couple of these cases, but this is the types of cancer that have had regression or remission. I think regression might be a bad name. I talk about regression and people didn't understand, because when you regress, you might go back to the disease.
Remission.
But it should be remission. Okay? The events preceding their remission, even though in the literature they call regression, so I think they are Japanese, that's why. Infections with a high prolonged fever. I remember when I was visiting UT Pines, they have a hypertherapy to treat cancers there. So, severe shock, coma, hemorrhage, partial tumor excisions and biopsies. In that case, biopsies would even regress the tumor. Can you believe that? Pregnancy and then no other biological event associated. Let's read it. It is possible to imagine that there is a spectrum of response that can be brought about by each individual's natural self-repair mechanisms. Then the placebo effects is an example of its operations. At the low end of the scale, and remission of a cancer cell would be in the other end of the scale. Because we know placebo effect. I remember when they were checking on St. John's Wort and cancer and depression. They figured out that St. John's Wort was not different than placebo to decrease depression. Okay, but they figured out also that even placebo was too good to treat depression. It was 30% decrease across together with St. John's Wort, and they say, well, this stuff is, it looks like whatever you do for a depressive person, you are doing good, whatever, because they feel that they are being treated. So, but there is something else on the placebo that is our mind on that. So the inner psychology of our brain might be able to create an environment that is in hospital for cancer. A case in the World Journal of Surgery in 1983 reported a placebo-controlled trial of a chemotherapy agent that was 30% of the control group that received placebo lost all their hair. Can you believe that? So tell me about that. So it's something that it happens to human beings. This is an interesting. This guy here, he has a severe form of cancer. He asked for this drug, crebiozin, and the doctor prescribed that. And the tumor masses melted like snowballs in a hot stove, start decreasing the tumor. Then he read in the journal, in the newspaper, that this drug does not have any effect at all. Was just and then he, what happened? The cancer began spreading again, and he required hospitalization, and he dies a few days. So while he was with faith on those things, he was helping. When he lost faith, So now we have three cases that I would like to share with you. First is Dr. Ikemi. This was published in 1975. This is a male, 64 years old, a pastor and preacher in his church, diagnosed with laryngeal cancer, refused surgery because the surgery will take his jaw and his voice all away. And then he said, well, this is God's will, and I have no complaint about that. Whatever should happen will just happen. So he continued preaching and dedicated to his church. 2 months later, his voice improved. 4 months later, he started preaching again. No evidence of the laryngeal tumor, and he died with 78 years old with an accident. Another case was a male, 77 years old, with stomach cancer, refused the surgery. He also was a co-leader in his church with, was not his father, his son. And he called the family council, and then he told them, well, I just want to prepare you for that. I might die, and I am just sharing with you this because I am satisfied with the Lord. And I will dedicate the last years of my life to the Lord and to the service. From that time, the symptoms went down. He continued his church ministry, traveling and doing missionary work. And then a couple of years after that, he showed no tumor at all, regressing in the tumor. And then in 75, there was no tumor. The KA, a female, 31 years old, stomach cancer with a metastasis, adenocarcinoma. The surgeon took 2/3 of her stomach and told her, with this metastasis, if he prepared the family, she's going to die in a couple of months, 3 months. Then she said, frankly speaking, I was not afraid of cancer. That was because I had my religious faith. I had been a stubborn person, and I feel I had my corners rounded off by having cancer. Faith to me is not the attachment to life, just wishing to be saved, but it is the gratitude to God who saved my spirit. I began to live a real life since that time. And then she referred that she started treating better people around her, and then she was content with her life. I say, okay, Lord, it's in your hands. 9 years after that, no signs of cancer, no metastasis. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, for me, this is amazing. Too much for me. No anxiety. The lessons that we take from this case. They have two more cases that are not even Christians. These are, it looks like they are, but they have, I didn't bring that, but I have to tell you. Two more cases are not religious people, but they have the same mentality. Well, it's time, whatever happens, happens. No anxiety or depression following the diagnostic. Previous devotion to their religion, gave themselves totally to God, renewed devotion to previous religious commitment, took measures to deconstruct their relationships with other people. So, now we know that when a person is diagnosed with cancer, there is a pressure. And this pressure blocks all the immune system and all these genes that will help to kill cancer cells. So we have to help those guys and share this idea that if they relax, they don't let the disease take over, they might have a better chance of survival. And then is the last verse for this lecture. Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, you believe also in me. My father's, you know this by heart. But this is that where I go, and I will prepare a place for you, and where I go, I will have you with me too. So with that hope, shouldn't we be the main guys in this world to promote this? Sometimes you get in trouble with that, but I'll tell you, one time I was doing a stress counseling, the patient came to me, oh, I lost my husband, and there is nothing that can help me. It's very tough. I mean, when you have a cause, it's easy when you don't have a cause for stress, I mean, but when you have a death in the family, it's very tough. Then I apply this to her. I say, well, you know, we believe in a second life, in eternal life. So you might see your husband again, and then, why should I say that? She said, oh, I saw him. The doors was shaking, and he entered to the house and was sleeping, and then I saw his voice, and then he is around. He is around. Hallelujah. And she gave me goodness grace. So sometimes the things that turn against us, we have to be careful. Go in peace, but not rest in peace. So we have one last lecture, but because this is supposed to be the last one. Remember, I did in the reverse way. So then I have other cancers. We go just the main topics that we might not have touched. If you have a question, I think we have a couple. We have time for one or two questions. No? Go ahead. Yes. Of course, I would. This week, a lady came here with, I suppose not to treat cancers, but she came here with a story of her friend with a lymphoma. I sent her to the Gerson's clinic. But the doctors that are going to do the chemotherapy are not are forbidding her to do antioxidants, diets rich in antioxidants, because it will affect the... And say, well, this is baloney. They don't know what they're talking about. So the best chance of survival is eating a diet, more vegetarian diet, more, because these guys don't know anything. They will give meat for these guys, you know? If you give meat to these cancer patients, you are just feeding the cancer cells. So... Your time.
Nuts. Why do you think that there's still, it seems like there's an increase in nut allergies. Is there something that...
especially in America, yeah.
Yeah, is it something in the American diet that is...
Well, Americans are allergic to everything, okay? Not just nuts. It looks like a... And I believe one of the factors is breastfeeding, lack of breastfeeding in the past. So we and another is that we depends on how you, most of these allergies start on when you are a young person, and it might be related with your intestinal flora, how you, if you have I remember Patrick mentioned about that, if your intestinal flora is not good, you might have parasites or that are going to go to the upper part, and this will create in a mix with food a reaction to foods. Also, if your intestinal flora is not good, you don't have the intestinal barrier, so you are going to absorb more entire proteins of outside elements that will develop allergies. Instead of absorbing one amino acid, that's what we want, you will absorb the whole protein, and then you develop all these allergies. But that's my impression, that most allergies either come from that, food, I would say 90%, or from pollution. It would be another one. But even pollen, I don't believe that pollen is an allergy. I believe it's more related to food. And there is research. You take milk and dairy from these guys and they improve like that. They can even eat more peanuts that they never eat. Just put them in without dairy. Yeah, that's true.
Well, you know,
I think
9 months, my son was diagnosed allergic to dairy at 1 year. So he never had, he's 19 now. He went away to college and then he came back to a fellowship and ate something with nuts. That's when we discovered he had an
allergy.
So I'm wondering if there's something he ate, he's eating away at college that maybe...
It can be. Our colleges, yeah, our colleges.
It's not there.
Yeah. Okay, guys, let's go here. You got your chance. Ovary cancer is high in the Philippines and Singapore. Is higher among whites in the United States. It's similar to breast cancer. It looks like the same gene is related here. It's more frequent after menopause. See, the same gene is related in 5 to 10% of the cases. It has a family history. I have to say that, but this is what the book says, so I cannot go against that. But if you read that, I mean, it's related to the diet, okay? Female hormone, estrogen, no procreation, early menarche, late menopause, smoking tobacco. So I like this picture here, but... breastfeeding protects against this cancer, and fruits and vegetables. And this one, if you take contraceptives, offers a protection. But don't forget that contraceptions will cause these two problems here: thromboembolism and breast cancer. So I already talked about that. Smoking increase. So, again, there is some parasites, mostly Schistosoma hematobium, that can cause this. We talk about that and about what kind of cancer has a relation to this. Remember? Anybody? I mentioned that there is some parasites related to some cancers. Even in Asia, it is more common. Liver cancer. Liver cancer. Related to schistosoma. So this industrial pollution, naphthalamine, whatever you call, is So, sorry. I'm talking about bladder cancer now. That's what I say. Well, it looks like bladder cancer, this stuff. It's bladder cancer. It's not over anymore. Sorry. So I thought it was I was with over here. So we are talking about bladder cancer. Okay? And then in this one, probably milk protects. So, water and bladder cancer. So this is something interesting. They did a research compared those that drank 6 cups per day with those that eat just 1 cup per day. So the risk of bladder cancer decreased 7% for each increment of 250 mLs. So it's a call for us to drink more water. All liquids, 50% lower rates of those drinking 2.3 milliliters per day compared to those that take 2,000 millimeters and 1,000 millimeters. So they mentioned here about all liquids, not just water. In the Advanced Health Study, we didn't find anything related to cancer, but we found that drinking 5 cups or more of water per day is related to less risk of heart disease and stroke. So it's, you know why? Viscosity of the blood. Yeah, now I'm going to repeat. When you drink water, you dilute the blood. So it's like a river. A dirty river will not flow. So the flow is going to be reduced if you don't drink water when you drink. But they didn't find an effect for all liquids. It's just water. When you start doing juices and you put some sugar there, and then you don't have effect. 46 cases of bladder cancer in the Advanced Health Study, and then consumption of beef was related to 2 times the risk of that compared to those that don't eat beef. So that's a good one. Endometrial cancer, uterus. Contraceptives protect this, again. It relates to breast, cervical, and liver. And they protect with uterus and ovary. Exercise is protective, vegetables is protective, overweight is a cause of this cancer. Related to hormones. This one, I just want to mention that this drug that they still use this drug after you have breast cancer, it might increase this cancer risk. So it's something that they have to be careful about. By the way, they prescribed this to my mother. And she took one time and she vomited one day long. And then she could not handle that. But it doesn't help if you have a good diet after that, you might have a better weight than this drug. But that's my opinion. Other risk for endometrial cancer. Let's see if we didn't cover anything here. Inability to have children. I mean, the ones that didn't have children might have a higher risk. But we already mentioned about that. This is a history of hormone replacement therapy. This is the big thing. You have heard about the HRT big fault, huh? Because they are using HRT. I never was fond of HRT to my clients. But there are some doctors that still today they prescribe a hormone replacement therapy, and it's a big mess because it will not decrease risk of heart disease at all, and will increase risk of cancers like this one. Huh? So how is hypertension related to endometrial cancer? It might be related to the same thing as obesity, diabetes, and hypertension. So it's metabolic syndrome, because today we know that hypertension and diabetes, they are cousins. one starts, the other will follow, and or vice versa. They will come at the same time. So it might be related to insulin resistance. Women with a personal family of a polyp, non-polyp colorectal cancer might have a high risk of endometrial cancer. So now let's go to the one that we have a hard time here, cervical cancer. Is related to sexual intercourse before 18 years old. Multiple partners, husband with multiple partners, or wife with multiple partners. Human papilloma virus is related to that. Herpes virus is related also. And then is so that's why some girls might have HPV infection and never develop, because we observe that. So at many people during biopsy, I mean, when they died, they found that they have HPV and they never had cancer. Probably they need, besides, because HPV is mutagenic, they need something to promote this. And smoking was one thing, and maybe diet is another thing. But smoking increased the risk on that. It's true, the second most frequent, this is the certificates. So now you have to stay longer, otherwise you don't get your certificate. But we still have time. I might finish on time. Survival in 5 years is 50%. So this is the place that we are talking about. Is related to HPV infections. And HPV is also related to vulva, vagina, penis, anus, and throat, and all of these type of cancers and genital warts. And I mentioned also that the last research is saying that colon cancer is also related. I mean, HPV can be one factor in colon cancer, mostly among homosexuals. Cervical cancer is considered a sexual transmitted disease. My friend that is against me is gone, but... No, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the other doctor here that disagree with that. But we are friends, and he agree with me later on. So the Gardasil is a vaccine for more... For the types of HPV that are more related to this cancer, and now we have another one that's called Cervarix. 70% of cervical cancer are caused by those, and 90% of genital warts are caused by those. The other 30% here are caused for other types of HPV, not for other types of whatever, but most of them are related to HPV. That's what we consider a sexual transmitted disease. And then is related also for throat cancer. And then now they are approving this to prevent genital warts, anal cancer, and probably penile cancer among homosexuals. Sorry about the mistake there, the typo, in men. So it's together with HIV, this is going in second place. So the Gardasil is a problem. I already mentioned about that. It's produced by a virus-like particles that resemble the variant, but is not the variant itself. And then we have a production of antibody that will kill the virus. And then we have three injections in 3 months. And then we remember the... what's the name of the guy in Texas? Blackner? The governor of Texas that he put this as a mandatory and create a big fuss around the country and parents revolt against him and so and so. I guess it's not mandatory. I don't know if your state is mandatory. No, yeah. But I remember in California we didn't have a law, but in local counties they promote a mandatory, and that's why we have that lady that talked to me. And anyways. I think someone has a question, but you hold your question for the end, and then I finish this. The side effects, because the big fuss on not accepting the vaccine, I will not discuss the ethical part of the vaccine. So if the kids are not having sex, there is no point to have this vaccine. Okay, so, but don't forget that 70% of high school, and well, not elementary, but 12 years and over are having sex in this country. In this country, I don't know about your country. So it's a mess. It's a mess. So we have to be aware of that. 70% of kids, high school kids, are having sex. So then that's why they are trying to do this mandatory. The problem with the vaccine is a painful shot, local soreness and swelling, nausea, fever, fainting. This is mostly what happened to any kind of vaccine. Yeah, common side effect for vaccine. So fainting is because you give an injection with whatever, sugar, to a kid and he will faint. Especially girls. Oops. But it's the fear thing. Women who use diacetylbestrol during pregnancy could have their doctors increase. Well, this is when they use this drug. We don't use that drug anymore. The absolute prevention, sexual abstinence. Or within a relationship with fidelity, protected sex, and then the Gardasil. Gardasil is not something that you can use if you have HPV. So it's a prevention thing. If the girl has HPV, will not do anything. So it's just for you. That's why they don't go over, I think we have here, they go over over 25, 26 years old. So this is the limit. Okay? This is the message for the CDC. I like to read this message. Sexually active adults can also lower their risk of HPV by being in a mutual faithful relationship with someone who has had no or few sex partners, or by limiting their number of sex partners. The fewer partners a person has had, the less likely he or she is to have HPV. But even a person with one lifetime sex partner can gain the HPV if the partner has had previous partners. So that's why we have to not be worried about the thing in the church. If we have to be involved in that, but they might ask you as professional, health professional, say, well, we have this case here. And so I have one lady that messed me up, and after 26 years of married, and so someone was diagnosed with that, and there is no other source, and say, well, but how about before? No, never had. And so how can you say that? You never know what happened before you get married, especially with men, but... I mean, yeah, you have to have a intercourse, and then the virus will pass. It's a transmitted disease. But I believe one intercourse would not do that. So that's my opinion. I don't know if the doctor agree, but I believe it's yeah. Yeah, no, that I agree, but I don't believe that one HPV would cause the cancer. So I believe you need, well, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't want to discuss this, but it might be the infection is transmitted, but it's not like...
it has to be a fertile soil.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what, yeah. And because the research is saying that when it's multiple relationship, then the risk is and so that's is for you to check.
Dr. Sal, do you remember the early days? The early days
I even didn't know about that. So let's go to the sun a little bit. We still have time. Skin cancer, most common cancer in the world. No more time. No. People with white skin, main cause is sunlight. You hold your horse there. Sunblock, avoid staying too long in the sun. Most of the cancer, skin cancer, are melanomas, and I mentioned to you that melanomas and skin cancer is related to sunburn, so avoid sunburn. And UVB can affect the gene P53, that is suppressor gene, and had a mutation there. It's a cancer of the Western, and related to color also, so African Americans have a very low level of this. And then this is just for you to know what happened with this cancer. So it's a normal cell. Once the P53 protein is there, and then this cell is developing a cancer alteration, it kills the cell, kill the alteration there if you have a 53 protein. But if the sunshine will, the UVB rays will affect these proteins here, will not fix the DNA, and then this cell will not suicide. This cell will multiply instead. Related to episodic severe sunburn. And then it might be common in AIDS people also, but it's another type of skin cancer. In some place in the world, and that's why we have to go with your county department or health department to see if they have arsenic in the drinking water, because some places have arsenic as a natural occurrence in the water. And then this might be related to not only cancer of the skin, but lungs, bladder, and kidney. So this is the level that should be secure. And then you have to know that in your country. In this country, we don't have this problem. Stomach cancer, fourth cancer in the world, is not common in the United States. Is common in China, as liver cancer is. Stomach cancer changed my life. I was in medical school, and I was supposed to be a surgeon. Then I was in the last year, and I followed a surgery of 6 hours. And was an inoperable tumor that was spread all around the internal cavity of the abdomen. And then I thought by myself, I'm not going to spend my time doing this. That is too late. The guy died in a couple of days after that. So I decided to go for prevention. So that's why I'm here. Otherwise, I would be staying doing surgeries in Loma Linda. Now, if this was in Brazil, I would not even come here. Loma Linda. Stomach cancer is related to this bacteria. So this is another thing that you have to make people aware that if they have heartburn, if they have indigestion, they should check. They should check the breath test to check for Helicobacter pylori. And they might or might not need a treatment for that, because here we do the treatment. But I remember in China, they is so common, this in China, that the guy said, well, everybody has this. So you do a treatment for once, but maybe you have to control your lifestyle and your diet later on, because we will not keep giving you antibiotic for that. But for many people in this country, you do a 1 week or 2 weeks of antibiotic and you kill this bacteria and you're okay. I will talk a little more about that, because it's not just the bacteria, it's where the bacteria is coming from. Dry foods and smoked pickled foods that are rich in nitrates are related to this also to this cancer. Lack of fruits and vegetables, lack of refrigeration. There is a very common correlation that like should be like that. So if you increase when the refrigeration started and increased, the rates of this cancer decrease, because the Helicobacter bacteria survive when you live in foods that are not refrigerated. So if they are kept in the fridge. So if you have foods in the fridge for more than a week, throw away, okay?
Because of this bacteria?
It might be this one. But avoid eating foods that are not refrigerated. Smoking and alcohol are related. Previous stomach surgery, family history of cancer, of this cancer, ulcers and gastritis. This is it can be treated with antibiotics. There is some foods like garlic, broccoli, and selenium that have anti-helicobacter properties. I remember I was reading this article with broccoli. They made broccoli juice, and then it was good to do that. And I remember when I was in São Paulo, we used to use collards juice. I don't know if they still use for collards juice for the treatment of ulcers and gastritis, and was very effective. And on that time, we didn't know about this bacteria. Cabbage juice is another one. It's the same. Probably has the same property against stomach cancer. So avoid eating too much salt. Avoid meats and mostly the processed meats. Pepper and alcohol might be in this business also. I have one article for one Mexican doctor that's saying that pepper is a high risk of stomach cancer. In this individual study, he was positive that no pepper for my patients here. But when we put the epidemiological studies, the risk is not that big. Diets rich in refined grains and sweets are related to higher incidence of these two cancers, stomach and colon cancer. So this is a review by Jack Jacobs. Protection against the stomach cancer. Garlic family is also good. Now we go to esophagus cancer. We have 2 times more common in men, fatal when diagnosed, more incidence in African Americans, no symptoms, surviving 5 years, 10%. It's not an easy cancer to treat. We have 2 types of stomach cancer, esophagus cancer, one that is close to the stomach and one that is upper level. So the most common in this country is the one that is common here that is related to GERD, that we call, or the Barrett esophagus, that is reflux. This chronic reflux might cause cancer. That's why sometimes if the people have heartburn, they should control for that. But I will tell you, most heartburns, if you change your diet, and if you space your diets, they will go away. So it's not just some people say, oh, I have to use Tums all the time. No, control your diet. Don't eat too frequent, and you are going to be okay. In the last resort, before you do Tums, you do charcoal. Yeah. My daughter is a nurse, and one day she was having heartburn, and she asked, what should I do, Dad? So charcoal. Charcoal? Well, how about Prilosec? So they say, what? I even don't know how to pronounce this drug, but I mean, charcoal is easy. You have raised with charcoal, don't you remember it? And then I have this good story to share with you about charcoal. I have 2 dogs, and the dogs, I miss them because they are the ones that I walk with and run with. They are small chihuahuas, big chihuahuas because it's a chihuahua mix. And then one day when I have this first dog that is called Wookie. No, I didn't put the name, okay? It was the wife. She liked the stars or whatever. Let's put Wookie. And then he started vomiting. Then he was vomiting. It looks like something was inside and or is stuck in his throat. We took to the veterinary. He said, well, it may be something, digestion stuff there. And it didn't help. So continue vomiting. And then we took again to another veterinarian. He said, oh, this is allergy. I say, my goodness, these guys are worse than physicians. And he gave an allergy. He gave a, sorry about that, okay. I am a physician, so I can. He gave a Benadryl injection to this guy. Boom, Benadryl injection. It didn't help at all. Then they continue vomiting, and then they took to the emergency room. My goodness, don't go to the emergency room, please. And then they did an X-ray, and they could not find anything. And they keep giving him a bunch of pills. Then I saw the vomit one day, and I saw some small leaves. And then I made the diagnosis. He was eating the leaves from one plant. And maybe he was a puppy. He was getting intoxicated, yeah? Ah, I got my charcoal stuff. Put a syringe like that and say, hey, open the, we put something to, because he will cut your, and I zoom charcoal, and I got some milk and I drop charcoal in the milk. Well, you are going to not be dairy. I don't care about dairy now. And He drank everything. In 1 hour, the dog was... he was fine. He was healed. So please, please, use more charcoal. There are two types of squamous... I already mentioned that two types of stomach cancer, esophagus cancer. This one is more common in America because of overweight. So if a person has a big abdominal, will have GERD, and then will cause the cancer that is in lower part of that. The cigarette smoking, the alcohol, on the other hand, will cause the upper esophagus cancer. Then I have to talk about my tradition here. In South America, they have the mate and a relationship with esophagus cancer. Esophagus cancer is endemic of that region, Uruguay, Argentina, Paraguay, and south of Brazil. And because we use this mate here, they use in a place like that, and they use with a straw that is a metal straw. And the main cause is a burning of the esophagus. That is, this is very, very hot. And then people use that all around, and even kids use that. And I don't use it. I just took the picture, okay? So I have to. I have some relatives that say, well, it's just the hot, it's just the warm thing, and then it's not a problem to drink mate. But my grandfather used to have, this is the Ilex paraguayensis. This is the tree that produces the mate. My grandfather used to produce mate, and he has a kind of oven that they put the mate there, and they put the charcoal and wood, and this would be to dry the herb, and would be drying the herb for many days sometimes. And then this herb will be impregnated with that smoke. And then I was thinking, it might be that it's not just the hot part. It might be something else. Nowadays, they have two types of mates. You have to be careful. If you buy mate made by this process, you might have the carcinogenics. But this guy was then I went to the literature, and I found this high levels of benzopyrene in mate drinks. He got eight commercial herba mate products, and then he found that there was 2 to 11 times the level of benzopyrene found in green tea leaves. So compared to the leaves that were not burned. And then they mentioned here that the amount is equivalent of one pack of smoking cigarettes per day. Isn't that something? I mean... Yeah, so even you, yesterday there was a lady that came to me and said, well, this new herba, the new herbal for health made by a physician here in Orlando that is Adventist, that produce a lot of herbal teas, and then we have yerba mate. I say, hey, yerba mate, no. I am from the south, I know what's the problem, please. The main effect of mate is that it's rich in caffeine. That's what people like it. It is a diuretic, helps your intestines, but take your sleep away. So it's a stimulant. And it gets a little addictive, you know. I have people that they have to do their mate over and over and over because it's caffeine stuff.
That's related, of course, to cancer.
Yeah, caffeine, well, caffeine is controversial there. Another herbal that used that is related to esophageal cancer is the betel quid. That is more in the Pacific Islands and Taiwan and the other. Do you have in your country? Uh-huh. So the betel quids are made by seeds, and then they go. This is a palm tree. They prepare this and they mix with tobacco leaves, tobacco smoking. So if you go to Taiwan. And they have, if you go to the country, they have small booths, I mean, every 5 miles with not just, I took this one, I took this picture, but normally are very beautiful girls with short dresses, and they are there, and people stop by to buy these things because this is very stimulant. Besides the betel quid, it's stimulant, and then we have nicotine. But this is related to esophagus cancer. And then I have here something that we don't understand there, that the aspirin will protect. Aspirin will not protect against stomach cancer, though. But it looks like it will protect against this one. Mouth, larynx, pharynx cancers. All are related to alcohol and tobacco. So these cancers are all related to that. Now they have HPV in homosexuals. Then mate also can cause these kind of cancers here because, remember, if it's going... You have a burning that probably is something that will increase inflammation. Burning in that case will be the promotion, and the mutation is brought by the benzopyrene. I'm almost finished. You have to know about Freud. Freud can explain that. I'm not sure about that. Freud has diagnosed with a lip cancer, a mouth cancer. So he did a surgery for that, but he didn't stop smoking his cigar. Then he got another tumor in the mouth, and then he did another surgery, and he didn't stop. After 30 surgeries in his mouth, he had to put an artificial mandibula, and he died of mouth cancer, but never stopped smoking. This is the father of the psychotherapy. Isn't that a problem with this guy? Well, the problem with him was that he used cocaine. He was the first one to use cocaine to treat patients with heroin addiction. So it's a substitute the devil for the evil, for the evil. Yeah. Oops. So this cancer is common in Hong Kong, and it looks like there are some factors there, but mostly because of this virus that is common also. Epstein, this is related to Epstein-Barr virus. Smoking is related, alcohol is related, lack of vitamin A might be related, and this is one that it might be in the community there. Smoked meats and fish meat, smoked fish. I think this is not important. Arsenic in the water, I already asked you. These are the countries that might have more arsenic in the water. They don't have the islands here. It looks like South America and China have to... Now, here we have these two the two states in the United States that should check for arsenic in the water. I'm not going to go that. And a little bit on blood cancers to finish, okay? Oh, we have time still. Why am I so in a hurry? Lymphomas, Hodgkin lymphomas, and leukemias, we don't know. The causes are not known. It might be related to some, might be related to Epstein-Barr, mostly the Hodgkin lymphomas, and then maybe to HIV and immune suppression. So if they have had radiation, if they smoke, if they have contact with benzene, might be related to leukemia. Vegetable and fruits might protect. Milk and dairy might be a cause. Red meat might be a cause. Overweight might be a cause. So this is something that might be common. I remember one friend of my son died with leukemia. I don't remember what time. And one problem that this boy have is that he was a strong marijuana smoker. Even though we have all this mess, I was reading today an article saying that marijuana improve or increase the body reaction against cancer. I don't buy that, but we have people in both sides. Yeah. In these patients here, in these workers here with soybean plantation, cattle farms, milk production, they have more leukemia, but it's related to the herbicides that they are exposed. People that work in rubber, asbestos, or tire factories are also related. Or if they have chemotherapy for other cancers. So you have chemotherapy for these, you might heal those, but you might increase your risk for this. Yeah.
What is the connection?
They don't have any connection.
Leukemia.
Yeah. That's the problem. They don't make any connection. They said that there is no related. Yeah. They said that it's not related, but milk might increase the risk. We don't know. We don't know. Maybe one day we'll know. Feverfew is an herbal, and then they made a treatment here. They give Feverfew for this. When they did the Feverfew with this drug here, the cells were the bone marrow cells were unscathed, so it means that they protected against the effect of the chemotherapy. So that's it. So that's the last thing that you have to say to your clients and to ourselves. Though I walk to the valley of the shadow of death, I will feel no evil. I will fear no evil, for thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. So thank you very much, guys. That's it. So I will sign your certificate, but while I sign, if you have any questions, I hope all the names are here. I think it's not the acute leukemias. The chronic leukemias are better for diagnosis. Some chronic leukemias even don't interfere with life, but the acute leukemia, I don't remember if it's lymphocytic. I don't know if you guys know lymphocytic or whatever that happen in children. These are very, very aggressive. It is less than 1 year. Most of the kids are gone. They kind of coming back very easy, even with treatment. We have a chaplain in our church in Loma Linda that died with the leukemia. That's the leukemia. It was terrible. Yeah. Okay, guys. Thank you very much.
This media was produced by Audioverse for the NAD Health Summit. If you would like to learn more about the NAD Health Summit, please visit www.nadhealthsummit.com. Or if you would like to listen to more free online sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.